This Cup of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad, and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. Plus, if you would like to support our programming personally, please visit trek.fm/donate to get our alien badges and art prints featuring original illustration by Toba Ushi.
This is Houston Huddleston from New Starship, and I'm restoring the Enterprise D bridge, and you're listening to Trek FM.
T. Earl Grey, hot.
It's time for another serving of Earl Grey, our dedicated TNG show. I'm Darren Moser, sitting in the center chair this week. Behind me in the turbolift is Crew Chief Daniel Prue. Daniel, that panel's off. Is the turbolift broken? Are we stuck up here?
Unfortunately, yeah. I don't know if you're aware of this, but the Enterprise D, we don't believe in stairs. So if the elevator breaks down, you know, we're just kind of stuck here until someone can come and fix it. So.
Or climb through mile after mile of Jeffrey's tube, which, I mean, it's good for the workout.
Yeah, it's true. I guess that is true. But, you know, who wants to climb ladders all day?
I sure don't. I mean, especially with its artificial gravity, I feel like I'm just being cheated. It's like there really is no gravity here, but we're going to install it to make it harder. I don't know.
But if you find the sweet spot on the Enterprise D, you can hang upside down. So it's okay.
There's also that resonating spot where you can play, you know, music and freak out Geordi LaForge.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, down in stellar cartography is Lieutenant Commander Philip Gilfist. Boy, I sure wish I could see what he was studying. I guess I'll have to walk down there to see it in person because he can't possibly show me without me being in the room. So how are you doing, Philip?
I'm not doing well. I really can't deal with all these emotions about charting the stars down here, and I want to be relieved of this mission. I don't want to be in stellar cartography anymore. I'm just going to go into my quarters and have a good cry, if that's fine with everyone.
Are you having a problem, or are you able to perform your duty?
No, sir. I no longer want this podcast. Deactivating me is the only possible solution.
So, deactivating you, so basically you want me to shoot you in the head, because that's the only way I could think of to deactivate you. Don't worry, I'll use stun. I'm sure it'll just be really painful, but non-lethal. Well, in the words of Commander Scott, sorry, sir, we can't even do that in the 23rd century. Tonight, we will have compiled lists of technology that somehow didn't quite make it into the 23rd or 24th century. So we'll be going round robin style, listing off inventions that just didn't quite make it. So to start this off, I am going to address seatbelts. I do know that, you know, they put them in the Star Trek Into Darkness, which everyone was kind of going like, finally, you know, something to hold people in their chairs. But yeah, I mean, especially on the Enterprise D, the ship that crashed on a planet, you know, I think seatbelts would have been something, even if it's something that just kind of like, you know, molded into the seat, or, you know, just, or even like a small force field that just held you down. I mean, they can do that on a biobed with an invisible force field that kind of like conforms to you. Why couldn't they do that in an emergency, you know, on in the captain's chair? I mean, except for Worf, he's just in trouble. He's just going to fly over that horseshoe no matter what.
Well, you know, the curious thing is they had not seat belts, but they actually had restraints in the original series movies. And I can't remember them off the top of my head, but it was kind of like the thing would come around your legs.
Yeah.
Like the
I
armrest.
Remember those.
Yeah.
So you just rip off your legs if you crashed.
Right.
You know?
But I mean, those sort of disappeared. And so then we had Next Generation. But yeah, I mean, like the logic is like that saucer, you know, hopefully you do the saucer separation correctly. You have a competent con officer who, you know, goes to the left, half impulse, away from the large celestial body. But there's a chance the saucer could crash. I mean, it's made to do that. But apparently the saucer's made to do that, but anything inside is not meant to do that. So you would think the designers would be like, if this saucer crashes, you know, apparently this ops console is going to rip off in 2 seconds, and everyone's going to fly out of their chairs. So, you know, some sort of restraint would have made sense.
Or maybe have a crash room, you know, that's all padded and everybody crowds in there, you know, I mean, that would make sense. But, and on the Excelsior, they had those really, I mean, we've talked before about how that captain seemed to be the most precocious man alive. And I just feel like that precociousness went into the chairs. I mean, everyone, like the camera's panning around and everyone's like, you know, sit. And then they tuck the little, it looks like little jaws, you know, to grab their torso. It's like, sit, jaw, sit, jaw, sit, jaw. And I'm just like, really? You're going to war. Like, I don't care what you call it. Like, we don't. Like, you're really playing this up.
Transwarp.
Okay, transwarp. Well, that just made it even funnier when it didn't go, because they needed things to make them go. But
yeah, they had a packlet engineer.
What do you think, Daniel?
I mean, are we not going to address the elephant in the room? Like, the deleted scene from Nemesis, when there actually was a pretty cool seatbelt that it's
deleted scene, you mean?
Yeah, that's what I said, a deleted scene from Nemesis. I mean,
so therefore it doesn't exist, much like Nemesis.
Oh, come on. Yeah, you would say that even if it was Nemesis proper, but yeah, you're right. I mean, you're right. Why? Like,
so remind me, where in the movie would that scene have been?
Right at the end.
The seatbelts.
It was at the end.
Where he crashes the ship into the other ship? Because that's when you would need
That's when you would need it, right?
Of any time.
Yeah.
When you choose to crash your ship into the other ship.
When the view screen blows out and, like, two people are sucked out into space, yeah, that might be a good time to have some sort of restraining device to hold you inside the ship. Unfortunately, we don't get that, but
yeah, that's what the Mothers Against Drunk Driving ad has. It's when instead of a picture, you know, of a deer or something, it's the view screen's been blown out. It's like, boy, Officer Jenny sure wishes she had worn her seatbelt. It's just this frozen corpse in the space. It's just,
it's kind of absurd, isn't it? Like that, you know, that we knew better in the 1980s and 1990s. To put seatbelts on everything. I mean, we have seatbelts on airplanes, and I don't know if anybody else gives this a lot of thought like I do, but like,
is it really going to make that much of a difference?
If your plane crashes, okay. Well, I guess whatever. I mean, I'm
glad.
Look
at it
there.
This way: everyone must wear a seatbelt except children. They're magically protected.
Well, those are your flotation devices, right? I mean, you have a child, Darren. You can
wait a minute. Whoa, hang on. Wait a minute. Are you saying that children are flotation devices?
Well, we haven't invented androids yet, so
android children are flotation devices. I think that's what Philip was meaning.
Oh my goodness, that is this podcast has gone really dark, like really quickly.
Happy New Year.
I like to think of it as we already have a great list of possible episode titles. All right, but moving on to our next lost technology, Philip, what's the first one off of your list?
I have a bunch, and some are other than others, but I guess one just from my personal experience and is kind of the technology of the soldier. Like, here in the 21st century, you know, a variety of countries have, you know, all their own armies. But, you know, at least here in the United States, I'm somewhat familiar with our technology. And, you know, today's modern soldier on the battlefield, you know, has all this technical equipment. You know, he or she has the
armor,
GPS. Well, yeah, I'm not even talking about just the regular, like, you know, rifle and armor. But I'm just talking about, like, the technology of, like, being able to see on the battlefield due to, you know, we have various systems we use. But basically, the concept is almost like sensors, honestly. But I mean, you know, you can—it's GPS positioning. You know, you can see where you're going. You got your GPS on you. You know, there are some helmets that they're making nowadays where you know, bring the helmet down, you can actually have that display, LED display, almost. I mean, a lot of this is this cutting edge, but it's there almost. But
it's
you
cutting
never
edge in, you know, 2013. So I mean, it's only gonna go upward and onward from there.
Right. And so in the 24th century, I mean, yeah, we have the tricorder, but it's this handheld device versus, you know, something that, you know, like a helmet or some LED, you know, even if you want to use the little what is it, the Jem'Hadar, whatever you call that thing they have, you know.
Google Glass, you mean? Yeah.
Yeah, right. Basically, yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, Google Glass. Like, just these things that we have for our ground troops, that those away teams, you know, in Star Trek, the away team look has evolved and then de-evolved. You know, you had TOS just going down in their pajamas, but then you had in the TOS movies, you had all these jackets and all this other stuff, and then back to TNG, we're just back to uniforms. You know, if you're going down an away team, you want to have all this equipment. You want to be able to see what's going on, all this imaging, GPS, you know, everything else, not just a tricorder that you may drop or you have to figure out and turn on, and so just having it right there in front of you.
I mean, how many seasons did it take for them to start beaming down in a circle formation, like fanning out instead of just like facing one direction? I'm sure it's okay, you know, I don't know. O'Brien gets pretty bored in that, you know, transporter room. So I don't know if he would have. They're putting a lot of trust that he scanned the area and knows that it's safe for transport.
Now, what you're making me imagine, Darren, is that Chief O'Brien, throughout the 4 or 5 years he was on the Enterprise D transporter room, just played with patterns of beaming down people. He's like, all right, regular line configuration, circle. Star cluster this time.
What if I stack them on top of each other?
Well, okay, think about this. Like, and this is totally oversimplistic, but if we're talking about this, like, he could beam, like, cardboard cutouts of the crew down in the front of, like, the enemy forces and then beam everyone behind them. So, like, hey, this gives you a tactical advantage. Like, people are like, what's that noise? I'm going to turn around and shoot at this thing. And then everybody else could be like, hey, freeze. Like, why don't they do stuff like that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, at least in Stargate, they would send like a probe through before just sending their team, heavily armored as it was, you know, into an unknown planet on the other side of the galaxy. Like, I mean, they did it right. And like you said, Philip, in TOS, you know, when they would go on missions where they needed a weapon, they had to strap a belt to themselves. Like, there was nowhere to even put it. It's like, well, I got to wear my suspenders today because I'm packing. So here we go.
And Philip brought up, like, this, like, soldiers or, like, the away team or, like, whatever. Like, beaming into a dangerous situation. I'm glad we brought this up because this is kind of one of the things I wanted to talk about. And for some reason, like, I don't really think of TOS 2 too much, but especially in regards to continuity. But, like, in a piece of the action, the Enterprise fires a stun beam across an entire city block. And it's like, you had this technology 100 years ago, and you never used this in TNG. Like, oh, we're beaming you into a dangerous terrorist situation, and Beverly could die at any minute. And like,
too bad we couldn't stun the entire continent. That would be super helpful.
We put it right next to our time traveler slingshot device.
Exactly. It's like, come on. Like, and even in Voyager, we see there's one scene that we see. The bridge is being taken over, and somebody puts their handheld phaser on wide beam, stun everybody on the bridge mode, and it's like, these technologies would totally exist. I mean, it would break Star Trek, really. That's why we don't see it, but it's, like, really frustrating sometimes when you're like, you have this crazy technology, why don't you use it?
Well, and I remember, and I can't remember it, like, and for some reason I have a stronger Voyager memory, but I know this happened in TNG too, but it seemed like, and you'll have to remember, this is probably actually pretty late in the in Next Generation, of, like, the phaser rifle. Like, when we first saw the phaser rifle, like,
right.
To me it was,
which,
like, a big deal.
It basically looked like a phaser with a tube behind it.
Yeah, it was like, that was a big deal. Like, oh, the phaser rifle. Uh-oh, we brought out the big guns now. Like, I don't even remember the first time we saw one. But this season, maybe? I mean, like, it was probably that late. I don't remember. I'm doing a rewatch right now, and I haven't seen one yet. I'm in the beginning of the fourth season. So, but it's just, yeah, the away team. I know we're scientific, we're explorers, and that's fine. And because there's some, not to get like serious, but there's some psychology of, like, especially in the modern army, of when you're going into a local place, that when you have all that armor and weaponry, that doesn't exactly help build a dialogue that we're here to in peace. But still, you have some equipment there for your poor away team, other than, you know, the little belt and attach like a little phaser and a tricorder and hope for the best.
Well, and like you, I like what you were saying about the bridge. I mean, you'd think, as important as the bridge is, why couldn't you just build something into the walls even that's like, hey, if all the humans are laying on the ground, activate program B and a phaser just shoots everything that's standing. Like, how hard would that be? I mean, If the Cardassians could come up with better, you know, home defense type, you know, replicator super shooters.
I'm picturing the emergency command hologram. What was it? The cannon?
Oh, what was that? The photonic cannon. Yeah, that was great.
If you think about what that really means, it's like fire the cannon that shoots fake.
Fire the flashlight.
It's basically fire the fake cannon. Yeah.
This would be Daniel's favorite data flashing the enemy. Oh, yeah. Solution.
True. That's true.
With his palm beacon, which has to be hard to aim. I mean, like. You know,
we
sock puppet maneuver.
We could talk for a while about flashlight technology, which clearly hasn't developed at all in 200 years. Like, you would think that, like, you could somehow, like, you have the ability to manipulate light and energy to make entire fictional beings, and yet your flashlight looks exactly the same as it does in the 1990s.
No,
like, why can't
in
you...
the future, flashlights don't have a handle. It's a palm beacon.
Unless you're on Voyager, and then it's more of a wrist strap.
Oh yeah.
See, that
two
was...
tiny, tiny lights that illuminate 1 centimeter in front of you. But, Daniel, so what's your the start of your list, unless you want to take flashlights?
No, yeah. No. I mean, like, there's a lot of, like, crisscrossing here, and you know, because we're talking a lot of technology. But one thing that really
bothers
me...
Yeah, we like to jump.
...is this concept of, like, and you can't call it GPS because we're on a spaceship and there are no external satellites or whatever, right. But like this idea that, like, you have to have your comm badge on for the ship to know where you are, like, really upsets me. Like, I was literally just watching an episode, and this happens in TNG all the time, but I'm just going to mention a Deep Space Nine episode because I just watched one where, like, they took off their comm badges and, like, they were trying to track them and they didn't realize it for, like, 10 minutes. Like, okay.
Like, why are they all standing around?
That's almost exactly what a line of dialogue is from the episode. But, like, from orbit, you can tell that there are 12 Vulcans and 2 humans, but you can't tell what's going on your own ship. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, you shouldn't need a comm badge to tell where anybody on your ship is. Like, the computer should be smart enough to say, hey, right now there's 1,012 people on this ship. Hang on a second. All of a sudden, there's only 1,011 people on the ship. Something crazy happened. I should probably let someone know that. Like, how many?
Well, yeah, the computer does know that because it'll. I mean, when they ask the computer, they say, "Where's Captain Picard?" It's like, Captain Picard is no longer on the ship. It's like,
and
hey, you know, maybe we should have set up an email rule that flags that and kind of lets Riker know.
See, the problem
he's
was
no longer on the ship.
The problem is when they set up the main computer, the Elcars. They when it said, "Do you want to receive push notifications?" They said no instead of yes. Aww.
That's
so.
The thing. And it's totally connected because it's like I was thinking that exact same thing. Like, I get a push notification on my phone if I get an email from Best Buy. And I'm thinking specifically of the episode, and I'm going to forget the name, where Captain Picard is kidnapped.
Allegiance.
Thank you.
Chain of Command.
It's a lot of them.
Yeah, it's a lot of them. And and there's a moment when they look at each other and, like, where's Captain Picard? And computer, where's Captain? Or, no. Not even. No, it's not Allegiance. It's the one where Q takes him off the ship in a shuttlecraft.
Hiding Q.
Hiding Q, yeah. And they're like, where's Captain Picard? And Captain Picard is no longer on the ship. And it's like, computer, maybe, you know, it would have been nice to know that. Like, their captain has no longer...
Maybe a little FYI, a little pop-up notification on the main giant bridge view screen that's like 80 feet long, you know?
Like, I would think, like, it would be instant red alert if that actually happened.
Even if it's manual, you know, have some... blue shirt, you know, as good as they are, some blue shirt ensign whose job it is to keep track of all the life signs, and if one of the bloopy lights goes off, you know, let someone know.
Or the shuttlecraft, it's like, put them on, like, a pressure sensor or something. Like, if it disappears, you know, we should know that shuttle is gone.
Now, we all know that you leave every shuttle bay unattended at all times, so you can have an unauthorized launch at any given moment.
Well, yeah, and they say, sir, an unauthorized launch is in progress. Shut it down. I can't. He's already out. It's like, it's why did you even tell me about it?
Someone's also beaming off on the transporter, and I can't stop it.
By the time you tell me, it's already too late. It's always too late.
The Enterprise...
Don't even bother me, Worf. I don't even care, because I can't even do anything about it.
The Enterprise runs on dial-up. It's absurd. Like, it's like, sir, someone is teleporting off the ship, and it's like, try to stop him. It's too late. He's already in
Switch
space.
The manual.
It's like, well, think about it. It takes 5 seconds for a transport to take place. And so let's say as soon as they initiate it, it sends a little beep to Worf or whatever. And he's like, Captain, you know, they're trying to do, and I like how he doesn't even try stopping it until he asks for permission.
It's a very tightly run ship.
Worf, it's like you burned up like 3 seconds just asking me. I'm sorry, sir. And you just burned up another one apologizing. Stop the transport.
They've entered war.
It's like we could always like re-transport them later if you just stop them for now just to be safe. And then we can figure out the situation and decide what the best cause, you know, the best action is.
Or I think all transports should go into the pattern buffer. And then there's like a release function like. To complete the second phase or something like that, you know, unless you have an activation code. And that would actually be a good trap. Anyone can, you know, transport, but they're actually just stuck in the pattern buffer until, like, a command-level person releases it to go the rest of the way.
And you know, this kind of goes back to exactly what I was just saying. Like, we have episodes where there are people that break out of the brig, go to the transporter room, and teleport off the ship. If the ship is smart enough, it should say, hey, I can track these people all the way from the brig. Maybe I should say no until I get like a command level authorization to transport them off the ship. Like, it's like the ship should be smart enough to do these kinds of things. This isn't like rocket science.
Yeah, they don't have rockets in the 21st century. That's a technology that doesn't make it.
I think
that's
the Ferengi have rockets, if I remember.
Oh, well, my next one kind of is in the same vein. It's security cameras and kind of the general bigger picture of security. And not to put this all on Worf and Yar, because, you know, we all know that they both weren't really that great at security. But, I mean, I know Deep Space Nine has security cameras, and you see them in the back of Odo's, you know, office. But that's Cardassian technology. But
and they have problems.
And Odo's a fascist, so...
But not even security cameras, just the fact that, and I know they do show views, like they'll show that view if a shuttle's leaving and they couldn't stop it, of it leaving, you know, from the back of the saucer or whatever. And I'm like, okay, I get that. But with how many cameras and the type of camera technology we have, like every freaking display on this ship should be a camera. Like every corridor junction should have some sort of sensor camera that's facing down every corner. Like when someone's walking from point A to point B. And again, I know, I mean, many, many of the things we're talking about today it's a writing thing. It's like, well, obviously they wouldn't want to show that because it would be too powerful and there'd be no way to actually have someone escape. But for the point of argument, you know, if someone, like you said, is trying to get from the bridge to, you know, the transporter room, they shouldn't be this little dot on the master systems display. You should be seeing like, hey, pull up cameras for deck 5, and you see everything and you see every person. And it's just, it's one of those things where it's like a Vegas casino has more cameras than the Enterprise D. I mean,
that's right, just... listeners, in Darren's 24th century, Big Brother is always watching you.
What do you mean? In reality, in the 21st century, Big Brother is always watching you. So, I mean, it's not that far-fetched.
You just want CCTV on the Enterprise.
Well, I would just say they could just beam, think about it, then the Enterprise could just beam all that footage to another, you know, ship, and they could that's their reality television.
And are they listening in on my calls too, Darren? Huh?
Real World Enterprise edition? Like, is that what's going on?
Real World Enterprise, yes.
And I have to ask the question, because I can't remember an instance, maybe like a joke, like a data joke earlier on. Is that, you just mentioning it, is that the first time we've mentioned Tasha Yar on this on this podcast.
Wait, hold on. I have to pour this liquor on the floor real quick.
No, it's not. I know when we talked about Tasha Yar last. We talked about her on the Romulan episode.
Yes. Oh, she doesn't. That doesn't count. That's what I mean. Like,
no.
Have we ever
Daniel thinks not only does it not count, it also doesn't count.
But I mean, like, have we ever actually talked about her as a character? Ever. Like,
not yet. We haven't gotten to that character profile.
Lieutenant Yar.
It's interesting.
I think we were going to do it, but then we killed it off the idea quickly.
Yeah.
Is she technically in less episodes than Pulaski?
Oh, goodness.
Possibly.
Trivia question.
I guess I've never... Yeah, that's tough to say.
Listeners, first one to tweet.
She died in, what, episode 22? Something like that. 20, maybe?
It was like three-fourths through the season. It was towards the end, but not... There's still a couple, like five or so episodes after. But anyway, so yeah, just security cameras, just security in general. It's like, really, this... I'm not saying... Yes, I get the whole trust level, like we've talked before. Like, people are... But it's like, yes, but you also beam people you don't trust onto the ship on a regular basis.
Because we see cameras... Hell, I'm blanking on it. The episode, the one where they have the they beam up like the light thing, whether it's a life form, and they have the camera on the
home
medical
soil.
Lab.
Home soil.
Yeah, that's true.
That was one of the few times. Bring up, yeah.
But even on Voyager, when they're like turned to channel like your EMH emergency channel, like, oh gosh, I have to get the book out. I got to look up what number that is.
Rewired.
I got to punch it in. It's like, it feels like a hassle, doesn't it? They're like, gosh, I don't want to see the EMH. I just want to talk to him on the comm. This is so stupid. Why can't he just come to the room and be in person? Oh, that's right. He can't.
Did you send him the G-chat invite? Oh, come on.
They're in the discussion and you just hear like the Google Hangout, you know, login sound, like doo 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 doo. It's a Skype chat, you know. Okay, well, back around. What's your next one, Philip?
I hate to be so one-minded, but I'm going to stick again with weapons. So non-lethal weapons. I mean, we have the phaser, which.
So not a Varian T disruptor, because boy, that thing I don't think even ever has a stun setting.
I mean, like, we have, I mean, this is off the top of my head, you know, we have the regular just electric shock, or you have the ones where they're using with like foam now, just to like, you know, a non-lethal weapon instead of like stun, shoot, and then shoot one person because you're shooting in a straight line, I guess. I don't know. Wide beam stun. I don't know. But there's a whole lot of non-lethal weapons other than just the sort of click shoot. I mean, I know a phaser is not a gun or a rifle, but it's the same concept, you know, straight line, yeah. Projectile, laser, whatever, phased energy. But, you know, that's kind of a very one-dimensional or two-dimensional way of thinking. I mean, there's a whole bunch of non-lethal weapons out there, you know, I don't know, shoot a net gun. I don't know. There's lots of stuff out there.
Like Batman? Is that what you're saying?
I can just picture Worf with a net gun. Like, he stops in the corridor after running, holds it up, and just...
Hey, it caught Riker in the Survivors. So, you know, these things do work.
Oh, yeah, no, that was the Chewbacca net.
That was the shoe, the tripwire, yeah. Where it lassoed his leg.
But yeah, why am I blanking on the name? What do you call the electric thing?
Oh, taser?
A taser.
Yeah. I don't know.
Sounds like phaser.
Yeah. It's two on the nose.
It sounds almost exactly like the 24th century weapon.
Yeah. But like, you know, an electrical shock, a taser, or like the foam, or there's just
pepper
all these
spray,
gas.
Anything.
Yeah. I mean, there's all these other things other than just point and click.
How about like a gun that shoots hypo sprays? Right? Because that's like instant unconsciousness.
No, I assume you mean it shoots out the the chemical.
A whole hypo spray.
Like, ow!
But of course, there's no thumb there. There's like a little mechanical thumb that dispenses it.
You just have the ammo belt full of
it. You hit it, it's like...
It just shoots out the metal things that, like, hit people in the forehead. They're like, oh, God.
So it's stunned by projectile, yeah. Not by the actual hypo spray. Well, And you're talking about non-lethalness, you know, Philip. And I think, you know, okay, stun settings, even hyposprays, like the closest thing to a hypospray is like, okay, I'll keep talking as everyone else pulls it together.
It's the ammo belt. I can just see it. It's okay. And it's full of hypospray.
Reload, reload. I can just shove it in.
I used all three of my bullets. I'm totally out.
Double barrel shoots two.
Oh, boy, that was...
But anyway, but with the whole non-lethalness, like, you know, I think of, like, anesthesiologists nowadays, and, like, that's a whole profession to, like, carefully balance keeping someone under. And I get, you know, technology, like, advancing over a couple hundred years, but I'm like, so you just assume when you just set this arbitrary, you know, okay, a phaser has, like, you know, level 1 through 10 or whatever, plus stun. And stun seems to be like this default, oh yeah, that's or heavy stun. Like you have stun and heavy stun. And it's like, I'm pretty sure that this won't kill you. You know, like, what if you're, you know, one of those 80 pounds when wet, you know, individuals, and it's just, I'm sorry, sir, he was just so weak, I didn't think stun would kill him. It was called stun.
I think it's the Barclay setting.
Rude.
Oh.
He's talking about the Esri Dax setting because she's very tiny, very, very small.
Nobody would want to stun her.
Or like a child. Like, are you saying that stun that would take down like a normal adult human is not going to like seriously injure a child? I don't know. It just.
I'm imagining it as a father. If you really had a phaser handy, that would just stun him just a little bit. Like, just for a couple minutes.
Time to go to sleep. Stun. No, no.
Our power pack has run dry. It's only been a week.
I was thinking, like, if you had to practice heavy stun settings on Alexander, it wouldn't be a big deal. I mean, I wouldn't.
He is a Klingon. You know, he needs at least heavy stun.
Yeah, so I wouldn't have a problem with that.
All right, Daniel, what's next on your list?
Next on my, like, is medical technology. Like, Philip brought up tricorders. And, okay, I understand tricorders fine. They make sense. If you're going to go to a planet and explore things and discover things, that makes a lot of sense. But, if like, as a general purpose survey tool, but, like, we see all of the time that the people in sickbay use tricorders to scan people for, like, regular viruses and stuff. And it's, like, to me, it's, like, you have, especially, like, on Voyager, but not to pick on Voyager, but, like, they have a bed with, like, a specialized
clamshell. Well, on TNG, they have that sensor cluster right above the main biobit in the middle.
Exactly. Like, and it's like, wait a minute, you have this handheld technology. What, like, is this necessary in sickbay? Like, in sickbay, I would think, like, you would be able to see all that information already displayed on that giant panel on the wall. Like, you don't need to scan them because the ship itself, you know, that room itself is scanning them at all times.
It's like if you're looking up something on your iPhone and you walk into, you know, like a Cray computer lab and you're like, nope, I'm still going to use my iPhone using my thumbs, you know.
Exactly, exactly.
Or Daniel, are you imagining like a Minority Report where you're just like pulling up the holographic
body? Yeah, I mean, in a way, I actually was about to bring that up, but I'm like, well, that's going a little too far. But yeah, kind of, because there, you would think in 250 years there would be that technology, like... As soon as they walk in the room, you're going to get all of this crazy you're going to get blood pressure immediately. You're going to get a scan of their... Like, if a tricorder can scan for miles on a planet, right? And that's handheld. That unit that sits in the top of sickbay can definitely instantly find out whatever the heck is going on inside a humanoid body. Like, without a shadow of a doubt. Like, there's no need to ever have a tricorder in sickbay.
You mean a medical tricorder?
Right.
With the salt shaker.
Yeah, exactly.
That's my EMH joke there.
Have either of you guys seen Final Fantasy: The Spirits Within?
Oh, a long time ago.
And it was a CGI movie, but it had really good, like, kind of pseudo holographic technology. And their medical technology, again, like, they would do an overlay of, like, right above the person, you know, would show the insides and what was going on. And again, we're saying, like, why didn't they have that? Well, because it's a TV show, and the budget for that would have been, like, astronomical. But, you know...
And it was 1989.
You know, but I think, and you know, we know holograms make really annoying sounds. I mean, remember when Picard had that little desktop model and, you know, the planet's going around and all you hear is
that was the modem connection.
Well, that was the modem connection. It's buffering the real-time data. One thing that I wanted to definitely touch on was flight recorders. I mean, so many times when things get destroyed or damaged, I mean, this is part in sensors in general, but like, especially flight recorders, if something goes down and they're like, boy, if only we could find the captain's log, because I'm sure he detailed the exact, you know, happenings of his death as he wrote them in prose, you know, while the ship was firing at him. I mean, that's kind of what they're expecting. And it's like, well, why doesn't every starship have a black box or something that is hardened and designed to just survive so that they can, you know, let's not put it near the warp core, you know, let's put it as far as possible from that. And, you know, why did that technology go away? I think there's a couple of plots where that could have really helped.
You know, this makes me wonder, and it's slightly off topic, but not about the logs that we see. Like, is there a class in Starfleet Academy of how to record a log? Because, like, you think about it, if it's, for me, it's hard to record, like, for myself. Like, if I were to do this, like, a log right now, and just talking right now and recording, like, all right, today this is what I did, I'm not going to be able to be like that. There should be a lot more ums, is what I'm saying, in those captain's logs. You
so
know?
You're saying it automatically filters out all the ums and pauses like a,
you know,
podcast?
Like, it's like, okay, Starfleet has, ordered us to the Gamma system on Stardate. All right, let me look this up. What did the order say? 4-2-1-0-6.
What's today?
106.
It's Thursday. Yeah.
And like, they really know a lot of that stuff. I mean, and it's very clearly recorded, I have to say. They have must have been good diction there in the Academy.
Well, but you remember, it's not like it's a message where it's super important. It's more like a journal.
Yeah.
It's more like, you know, Admiral Nechayev, like, beamed over today. Boy, does she gets on my... Yeah. Just, yeah. I offered her tea and she said, no, she's going on the list.
All that's popping into my head, like, and I know we talked about this, I guess, 2 weeks ago now, but is the captain's log in Generations. And I it makes sense, right? Like, I don't know. Do captains do that now? Does anybody, like,
yeah,
do we,
it's
do
real
we
thing.
Know?
Yeah.
But, like, but is it, like, the same kind of thing? Like, I feel like their captain's log are probably very, like, it's like paperwork. Like, you're filling out, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Oh,
like
what happened today on the ship?
Yeah.
It's during this cruise.
But, like maybe in the 21st century, we decide to grant these captains artistic license. So.
Well, they have personal logs they can do.
That's true.
But even for the captain's logs, right? Like they're just like, captain's log, you know, Stardate, whatever, you know. Ambassador Troy is visiting the ship and this is terrible. Like, you know, like, sometimes, like, the difference between a personal log and a captain's log seems to be pretty,
Or they're super, or like, yeah, like you said, they're super vague. They're like, Ambassador Troy is, you know, is visiting. I'm unsure if... how this will affect, you know, my command decisions for this mission. It's like, what does that actually tell us? That doesn't really give us any useful information if we were to find this, you know, in a black box.
Yeah, I think a lot of the stuff we're bringing up, I mean, I just keep imagining that these low-level officers, like there's Lieutenant JG, red shirt, in Starfleet Academy, who's like secondary secretary assistant to Admiral whoever, who has to look at all these logs. It's like, okay, you got all the logs from all the ships in Sector 4. You have to review them all and file them. And he or she's having to listen to all, like, captain's log, Commander Data is now engaging his quest of humanity. Like, what does this have to do with anything? Okay, fast forward.
And what I, and this sticks out. There's one instance, and I can't specifically remember it, but it sticks out to me for one episode in TOS, but I know it happens in TNG and probably in, it definitely happens in all of the Star Trek, where like they'll go to commercial break and then coming back from commercial break will be another log, but the time difference between the two is like 5 seconds, which means that they must have recorded the log, like, when a crisis is going on. It's like, Captain's log 47259, we're about to be destroyed by the Romulans. And it's like, wait a minute. You're like, so you're sitting here recording your captain's log in the middle of a crisis. Obviously, it's just a plot device, but, like, it's like, maybe you should use it a little more cleverly.
Now, did they ever, in TNG, because I can think of other shows, but in TNG, did they actually ever show anyone recording a log?
The only, like, TNG-ish logs I think of like that, where that we see played back, are, like, in Parallels, where we keep seeing the One of Worf, where he recorded the log in the shuttle about him winning or losing, or, you know. But, I mean, that's close, because we're seeing him, but it's the playback. I know what you mean. Like, you're saying, like, the Sitting original down. Recording.
Oh,
like
the Geordi episode. The what is that?
Aquiel?
No, God, no. Although, yes, I mean, I guess that's technically right, but yeah.
Well, he reviews
it. It is a Geordi episode, so.
Yeah, the one where he goes to the holodeck and it's like, what is this? Oh my, I can't believe I can't remember this. He's like, there's a Arch. Shadow here. A shadow here we don't know. What is it from?
Oh, Identity Crisis.
Identity Crisis.
The one where he, yeah, that's a pretty awesome one.
It's a good episode. Yeah,
it's the other Geordi one.
But yeah, I think you're right. I think he does record.
And they have a video recording. I mean, for some reason, they were like setting up that video camera or whatever it is. Like, but that's like a few, like we were talking earlier, like a black box. Like they literally have a video record of an away mission. And it's like, why doesn't this happen more often? This would help so much.
Well, don't you know, Daniel, that's how we're seeing the show, because there's a camera floating there the whole time. It's like Cambot in Mystery Science Theater 3000.
That you only see in the intro, but not in the actual show. Well, yeah, it's true. Like, why wouldn't the comm badges work like as cameras to like show the point of view of whoever's wearing it? Because I mean, that would be helpful. I mean, we have soldiers, you know, like even like in Aliens, you know, they had the little cameras on there. You know, game over, man.
Man.
You know,
no, the only way we can have someone do that is if they were blind from birth and are wearing a special prosthesis over their eyes, and one day we'll put a camera there so we can see what they're seeing. Unfortunately, they see
Data,
things in different...
Data saw the future. Data saw the future. He's like, Captain, Commander LaForge's eyes are better in every way and can record logs personally. So why aren't all Federation officers forced to have their eyes surgically removed? And Edgar Picard goes,
even well, you've made well, your point, it, Data. You may live.
I mean, it makes even more sense that everything, not even, it's literally established in TNG that everything Data sees is recorded. Like, it's just,
oh,
it's
yeah, we never play back Data's POV.
Never.
That would be an awesome episode.
Never.
It's like it makes me think of RoboCop. He's like, you fool, he's a cyborg. His memory is admissible as evidence.
Or think of Clues. Like, literally, that episode would have been over in 5 minutes if they were like, hey, Data, give us the recording of the last 36 hours. And he, oh, well, okay, I guess I never thought about that. Like, it's like...
Yeah.
So again, in Darren's 24th century, I can see that, remember, Data never sleeps. And if you remember Unification... You don't want Data staring at you while you try to go to sleep.
There's 8 hours of him just filming Picard sleeping on the Klingon Prey. All right, so next up is Philip.
Now, this one will probably be a little, not controversial, but maybe semi-so, because anytime you talk about animals or pets, I know people get a thing about them. So, but here's my thing. Electronic pets, okay? Like, we have them. They're not,
Gigapets.
Like, super advanced. I mean, they're more, you know, in I would think, like, Asia probably has probably a little more advanced than what we have right now here in America, at least. But you know, the electronic pets, right? Like, to me, it doesn't make sense to have real pets on a starship. You know, like, in the 24th
like
century.
Pets, you know.
So what you're saying... Where
is Spot's kitty litter? That's what I'm asking. You know, that's like, there's some, you know...
Well, what you're not aware of, Philip, is that feline supplement 47 is genetically engineered so that it doesn't produce any waste. So Spot doesn't have to actually use the...
I'm no biologist, Daniel, but it's got to go somewhere.
I'm no blue shirt, but I'm pretty sure.
I mean, I'm not going to get graphic here for our listeners, but it's, you know, unless there's like a bunch of rainbows coming out of somewhere in that quarters, there's
is he a somewhere. Ninian cat?
Yeah. So you're saying everybody on the Enterprise should have Tamagotchis?
I'm just little canines.
Or canine. Okay, all right. All right.
That's right. Good I'm enough for the doctor. I mean, that's all I'm saying. But
I do remember, I think it was Patrick Stewart who actually didn't, like it said, he didn't actually like Livingston. Like, he didn't like the concept of, so Picard keeps an animal imprisoned in his ready room. That concept.
What do you mean? Don't you guys know Livingston's an android?
He's an android, man.
He's a Dr. Soon creation. He's a B1.
Let's just say, especially recently on the network, rumors of Livingston's death have been greatly exaggerated. That's all I'm going to say.
Everybody knows from First Contact. Reports of my assimilation.
Yeah.
And, you know, we all know that he was no one's pet.
What's your next one?
So this is kind of strange. I have a big problem. Okay. Wow. Okay. I'm going to start.
Yes,
over.
We know, Daniel, but what's your next one?
And her name is Kira.
I have a love hate relationship with this. What I'm going to say, the interface system between the people and the computer systems makes no sense to me. Elkar's system. I think it was a brilliant design for the time, and it makes sense for what they're doing, but it makes zero sense logistically. It doesn't so I have a pen.
Let's not label everything. It's just all going to have numbers that we somehow know what.
Well, so much
does.
For having the Akutas on. Thanks, Daniel.
And that's the thing. That's why I don't want to be too harsh on it, because it's a different world in the 1980s. They created a really visually distinctive, intelligent way of, hey, this is the 80s. We don't know what's going to happen. But and I know this is totally in hindsight, but it's wait a minute. You have a 6x6 panel and, I don't know, 70% of it is covered by one button? That doesn't make any sense. And It's
have you looked at the standard
guard.
Webs?
What if you have to put your hands down and you accidentally hit the fire torpedo button?
Well, because if you look at the 21st century, that area would be ads now. So that's pretty much, it's the same thing, really.
That man is playing Galaga. No one thought we would notice.
Oh, Darren wins this episode. I love that. Love that reference.
But you're right, Daniel. And I know the concept was that, you know, the reconfigurable workspace, much like, you know, today's smartphones is, you know, okay, rather than have these physical buttons, they can be whatever they need to be. I mean, if you need to have, you know, let's say the ops panel gets destroyed, you could make the navigation panel be ops for a moment if it needed to be, you know. I mean, Worf even chews out, you know, a couple of people. He's like, this panel is not configured optimally to, you know, shoot stuff, fix it, you know. And but yeah, I know it's I think that's one of the best examples though of just a TV show. Like, it can't, the time and the budget and the energy needed to actually make them be correct, and then the actors have to hit the right button, you know, on screen.
And it wasn't it Will Wheaton, I think, like he was the only one, or I remember specifically him stating that he had a system to make it look like he was actually doing things, and wanted it to make it look like he wasn't just randomly pressing buttons, but he was actually accomplishing something. So
life forms.
Now you have to admit, on the bridge, when you have the captain or the first officer, you know, with his leg on your face, you know, and you're there on the bridge and you have to look busy, but you know what? There's nothing going on. We're at warp 8. We're not there yet. But you have
Council
to look
just sitting there chewing gum.
Yeah, you have to just press a button. You're just pulling up the library computer and let me learn about 20th century rock and roll. I don't know. You know, what are they doing the whole time?
But yeah, you're.
I mean, they're not all the captain. They can't all go to their ready room, you
know? Where he plays solitaire.
But that's the thing, like, and I know it's logistically not possible, and I don't, like, fault the show at all for this, because clearly, you know, it's an 80s show, it's an early 90s show, it couldn't do it. But, like, if a TNG era show was made now, they could, like, oh, I'm going to drag this giant button off the screen, and if I'm looking up the, you know, the 20th century technology, I would get this giant video of all of this other stuff, and, like, it's very static, you know, in the 24th century. And I don't blame them for it. But look, you know, looking at it in hindsight, it does irk me a little bit.
Now, it slightly pains me to say, which I know, you know, our listeners will think I shouldn't be pained at all. But the design that we're talking about that would be really good is out there in Star Trek. And it was made by J.J. Abrams. If you look at the design on board those Enterprises, or that Enterprise, the one Enterprise.
That's true.
That Enterprise, it is very, know, like, those view screens shows all the data right there.
Smart glass. Love it. Overlays.
One of the...
Yeah, well, no, that he did get that right.
Yeah, of course. Well, it's a beautiful Enterprise.
We're talking about the inside, Daniel. The inside.
Inside. Inside. The bridge.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, I thought we were talking about the nacelles. I'm sorry.
Okay, last round, so make this a good one. I'm going to go with fuses. Boy, man, every time something blows up, I just keep thinking, like, you know, did the circuit breaker get, you know, uninvented in the last 200 years? Now, I did hear something that actually has prompted this whole episode. I was listening to the Delta Quadrant podcast, and they were covering an episode where the Delta Flyer had been damaged, and they were trying to get it fixed, and a panel, like, blew out or overloaded, and they said, oh, like, the magnetic interlocks failed. And he had a really good explanation. He's like, well, in the future, fuses, you know, a fuse is like something that pops, but it breaks. Like, then you have to find another one. You'd have to, like, stock a whole cargo bay of fuses. But a magnetic interlock in his canon was like a fuse. It could trip, but you could reset it, you know, more easily. But I don't know, fuses, circuit breakers, it just, overall, it's like, I get production-wise, like, you want to show something's taking damage, like, they've shot the torpedo launcher, so Worf's console has to explode in his face, you know, but...
What about the, as Admiral Chris has talked about in the Ready Room, what about the rocks they keep in the ceiling?
Oh, boy. We had a big discussion. The first Ready Room I was ever on was yesterday's Enterprise. And we,
it's like they shoved gravel everywhere.
Yeah. You literally see rocks fall from the ceiling and kill Rachel Garrett. Like, that's what happens. Like, they just drop there. And it's like, what the heck is going on?
Or like when the, you know, if the front con console explodes, it's like, oh, look, all these black shards of glass are now flying into your face, you know. Anyway,
I mean, Generations is basically, this is the textbook of everything going haywire as far as explodey haywire.
Yeah.
Explodey woody.
And fuses, like, it also goes hand in hand, though, with manual, you know, go to manual release or manual mode. It's like, where is there physically, like, let's just, so maybe some control linkages, I don't know, something that goes to a handle that's behind some panel that when you pull it, the door freaking opens.
All,
you know,
the smack y'all want to talk. You know what the best example of that is? Manual helm control, Star Trek Insurrection.
Yeah, we don't count
that. That is manual. He is holding a stick.
Which is the dumbest moment in
That's
any...
manual.
No. That is the dumbest moment in any Star Trek film, including all of Star Trek V. I'm sorry. It doesn't make any sense.
Daniel, joystick envy.
I'm 50-50 on this. I think it is cool, but flying a three-dimensional ship in space, you're going to need a couple more controls for things, you know, like the Z axis.
No, the problem with it is I had the same joystick that they put on the Enterprise, like playing X-Wing versus TIE Fighter in the 90s. Like, no, you don't get to control this ginormous ship with this ridiculous...
There's a retro designer at Utopia Planitia
slightly,
who appreciates the classics.
I mean, before Tom Paris was shoving, you know, retro junk on the wall of the Delta Flyer, let's not forget that Riker put a pedestal with a 1980s joystick in it.
Oh, God, that is just awful. I've literally, until this moment, I've never connected Encounter at Farpoint with Insurrection, though. And, like, just until right now, like, at least that makes sense. Riker is the one to do it manually. I get that. And I'm glad it was Riker.
Daniel, please tell me you're not going to make that a bumper sticker.
No, I'm not. Believe me, no, I won't do that.
All right, Philip, what's your final choice?
No, I'm kidding. Mine's going to be kind of a... I really hate to do it, because it's one of those things, like, I want to preserve this thing that we have here, but I have to admit, it's hard to believe it'll last for another 300 years. Books. I love my books on my shelf. I prefer them. I have a Nook, which, I mean, I do enjoy having the Nook, because I have, like, a bunch of stuff on there. But if I can have that paperback or that hardback, I want it 100%. But it is hard to believe that in 300 years, you know, you're going to have that many books around. It's all going to be whatever, you know, electronic. I mean, like Picard, I mean, I love me my Picard, and, you know, he still has some of his books, you know, or if you listen to Literary Treks, you can hear that clip at the beginning and end of every episode of Literary Treks, you know, with Picard on Captain's Holiday bringing his books. But I mean, I have to admit, I just don't see them lasting 300 years, both literally and figuratively. I mean, I don't think they'll literally last 300 years. They'll be falling apart. But literally, I don't see them keep publishing bound books.
Well, I have two thoughts on that. One is, I totally agree. Like, I mean, have you ever tried to move with books?
Yes.
I mean,
I have a storage bin full of like four
the
boxes.
The sheer weight. You're just like, my gosh, it's just bricks. It's just bricks of words. There's so much
bricks of words. Is that what like aliens will call books?
That's the official.
Why this brick of word on wall?
No, they're talking about our books. That's what you. Oh,
bricks. Well, that's the official title.
Bricks of words on wall. But the other thing is, but you're forgetting though about replicator technology. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could have a small storage data crystal and just put your whole library in the replicator, and it just digitizes not just the story but the physical object. And so when you want it, because you're totally right, like imagine if every crew member on the Enterprise wanted to bring 100 books with them. Oh my gosh, you would just need deck after deck of library, you know. And the Elcars would get jealous because the L in Elcar stands for library. Yeah. So
this isn't the TARDIS. We don't have a 16-story library.
I'm sorry to Philip and to a lot of people who think this way, but I agree there would not be books. Like, and I don't know if this was a Trek FM person who tweeted this, but I literally just recently saw it, and I can't remember who it was, but who tweeted this, and it was like, it was a quote from somebody, a teacher in the 1800s, who had said...
Wait, a teacher from the 1800s tweeted?
No. It was a quote from
it. Can't believe everything you say.
It was
I
a quote from a teacher. Yeah, I think it was in the 1800s. Okay. Anyways, and they said, these students now, they're too used to paper. Like, they don't know how to write on slate. What's going to happen when they run out of paper? And, like, it's this.
I saw that tweet, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I don't know who it was. But so, you know, props to whoever tweeted that out. But anyways, it was interesting. And it links up to where we are now. Like, it's like... Yeah, to a small degree, like, has this kind of connection with physical books, but you're absolutely right. They would not exist in the future. Like, there's especially 250 years in the future, there's no conceivable way.
Well, just think distribution. Like, you write a book and you're like, I want everyone in the quadrant to read this, so I better ship them on a transport to where you are.
Because we would have already cut down all the trees.
No, there's still a couple on the Valley Forge. Don't worry, we'll go find them.
Is the Lorax still there? Okay. yeah, I mean, I would just to point this out, just to like, I mean, you know, not to be political, but like, I live in the state of North Carolina, and our state legislature passed a bill. I mean, it wasn't the only thing in the bill, but one of the things in there was to require the teaching of cursive writing in our schools.
Did you know I use that all the time?
Right. So, I mean, I'm just pointing that out. You know, so that's something, you know, we'll see.
Because I use it to write a check. Oh, that's right. I don't write checks anymore.
Oh, wait a minute.
See, that's just fear of change and fear of,
it is.
You know, I'm not saying progress or no progress. I'm just saying change. Like, I mean, I've seen it posted, you know, to go on a small school tangent, but it's like, I learned, boy, I'm really glad I learned cursive writing, but I wish I had learned like how to cook a meal,
you
know, for myself, do my own budget, you know how to pay off loans and, you know, and do a actual research in a library, like things like that, things you would actually use in life. But anyway,
how to podcast, man, I had to learn that in the main
how
streets.
To podcast. All right, Daniel, what's your last one?
I'm going to say flat screens would not exist in the 24th century. I don't think, like, we have another thing that I think the JJ verse does really well, and only a little bit better than normal. I think it could do much better. But, like, we see, like, a dimensionality to the view screen. But even, like, the
right.
touch panels and stuff like that, like, we have, you know, it's this concept that we have that you have to physically touch something, and I don't think that will exist. I think there will be.
Are you saying we should have the Kinect on the Enterprise?
I think that's what it will be. Like, frankly, I do. I don't think we're far off from that now. Like, you know, who knows? In 200 years, we're just plugging in our brains or whatever. But, like, to think that we're actually physically touching touch screens still.
Or the fact that Data has to physically touch
let's
touch
not
screen.
Even let's we've already gone on that.
Darren, because I don't think Daniel is. Darren, are you familiar with Babylon 5, The Shadow Wars? Was that it? Or the one where it was like the very bad TV movie, like the last one they did, where like...
Yeah, they had like two movies to wrap up.
Well, they had like the guy who was like in the ship as the weapon systems, and like in order to like fire torpedoes, he would just like throw his arms out. Anyway.
Well, I'm thinking more of in Star Trek, you have the USS Relativity where they have the screens, but they don't touch them. They just kind of like wave their hand over it like they're playing a Thermion. Well, it's been real interesting talking about the missing technology on TNG today, but this is just one of the many topics that we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's a quick look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Romulans on TOS.
To be fair, maybe their visual communications were on a different codec. Maybe the original Earth ships were using Skype, and the Romulans were using Google+.
Earl Grey.
Generations with Standard Orbit.
And again, I don't know if Mike and Drew would say that Kirk is at his best or not.
No, he's not. But Chekhov is on point.
The Ready Room.
Affliction and Divergence.
Yeah, the other interesting thing about that, though, is to compare the Klingon ethics with the Section 31 ethics, right? Because there are, like you said, there are some groups within the Klingons who maybe don't feel exactly the same way. But then there's this group within the humans who feels completely different. And you kind of wonder what the Klingons think maybe about someone who wouldn't do this.
The Orb.
Implications of genetic enhancement.
There's just a danger that you're going to become... like the lower rung of society, and only the people whose parents have the money to enhance them are going to be those who have good lives.
To the journey!
Voyager Season 2 Marathon.
So he starts searching frantically for clues as to what happens when this small rock gets thrown at him. So he kind of ducks, pulls out his phaser, gets ready, and another stone comes flying through, and guess who's throwing it?
It's got to be the monkey.
Of course it is. Thank you.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
The 4400.
You're describing a scenario in which we watch something and laugh hysterically that people all around us, everyone we know, will watch us react to this in this way, and they would say, what is wrong with you two?
Warp 5.
Xenophobia and the Coalition of Planets.
Justification in his mind is that the Vulcans were observing us. They knew the war was happening. They didn't do anything to stop it. But, you know, it really wasn't the place of the Vulcans to step in and stop World War III.
Literary Treks.
James Swallow, The Poison Chalice.
Everybody in this story is dragged into a situation they don't want to be in. And that's kind of where the title, The Poison Chalice, originally came from, is the idea that, you know, Riker is given this promotion, which on paper sounds like a really great idea, but it's a poison chalice. You know, it turns out that it's not what he thought it was, and in fact, you know, he's being dragged into something that he doesn't want to be involved in.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and get in on the Daily Trek Talk. You can find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Zune, Xbox, or you can stream and download files from the website. Just visit trek.fm/pd for the podcast directory to get all the links. And we received a wonderful feedback from our friend Dante Hopkins through the Trek FM website. And he just wanted to let us know that he enjoyed our TNG special, you know, really enjoyed season 5, also had an affinity for Masks, which, you know...
Not everyone's perfect.
But he had a good point. I really liked how he was explaining different episodes, you know, like Evolution and Masks. And while not everyone loves those episodes, but depending on, you know, your background or what you're interested in, if you're really into biochem or you're really into, you know, making things out of clay, those episodes could really be just interesting for you. So I liked his take on it. And he also had a great discussion about Emergence, and he felt it wrapped up TNG, kind of how, as I quote, the multicolor thingy leaving the Starship Enterprise represented the 7-year TV journey being passed to us and posterity. I'm like, oh, that's a nice point. Good. You know, it brought a tear to me eye.
Oh, shut up.
So thank you, Dante, for your feedback. If you'd like to share your thoughts on today's episode of Earl Grey, just go to trek.fm/contact. From there, you can choose the form that says send a show and choose Earl Grey. That will come to all three of us by email. You can also use the tab on the right-hand side of any page to send us a voicemail using your webcam's microphone. We'd love for you to be the first voicemail of 2014. And you can talk to us and our listeners on our forums at trek.fm/forums. In social media, you can find us on Facebook as facebook.com/trekfm and on Twitter under the username trekfm. Also, for your New Year's resolution, why not leave us an iTunes review? It would help all our listeners find the show and help ensure Earl Grey a prosperous 2014. So, Daniel, if people want to talk to you about, you know, either flight recorders or medical technology, you know, within 140 characters, where could they find you?
Twitter would be the best place. I am at OneUpDan. That is the number one, not the word.
And Philip, if people really feel that books will, Philip, make it into the 24th century, where will they find you?
They can find me at Book Nerd. Oh, no, wait, that's my other one. They can find me at NC Public Servant on Twitter. It's NC, like North Carolina, Public Servant. And then we'll tweet all about Doctor Who and Star Trek and all the wonderful things going on.
And NC doesn't stand for National Cuneiform Society. You know, gotta keep learning your cuneiform. Can't let that die.
Exactly. And I think it's going to start for my new company that's going to make hydro spray machine guns.
And if people are wanting to chat with me, they can find me on Twitter at Dr. Sci-Fi. That's DrSciFi. They can also find my other podcast, The Dr. Sci-Fi Show, which has relaunched in 2014, back and better than ever. This month we'll be discussing sci-fi novels. Well, before we go, we'd like to ask each of you to please support our sponsor, who make it possible for us to bring Earl Grey to you and other shows each week. Audible.com is a great way for you to read all of the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from and new titles coming each week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. There are many next-generation books available, including The Devil's Heart, read by Gace McFadden, and Q in Law, read together by both John DeLancey and Majel Barrett. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook with your choice, along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. So give it a try today. Catch up on all those classic books that you've yet to read or that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. And we thank you and Audible for supporting Earl Grey and Trek FM. Also, help us continue to bring Earl Grey to you each week by getting your alien badges and art prints featuring original illustration by Toba Ushi. You'll find them at trek.fm/donate, and your support helps us pay for the cost of production, hosting, and bandwidth that's needed to bring the show to you each week. Well, Philip, it looks like you've finally finished that triplet. Oh, I could have just used the other one at the other edge of the bridge, couldn't I have? Oh, I forgot that. Or the battle bridge emergency triplift. I forgot about that one too. I've just been cooped up in my ready room for the last 5 hours. I really need to get a map of this place. So I think I'm going to finally retire to my quarters and just dream about more technology that we don't have here in the 24th century. So live long and prosper.
Engage.
What? I'm the engaged guy. You can't do that. Wait a minute. I remember.
It's 2014. Anything's possible.
Make it so.
Endgame.
Fire.